From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, miracles. Here's what happens. At least 22 people were killed in rescue crews searching desperately amid shattered homes and tangled debris for dozens of people still missing after record-breaking rain that came down within 6 minutes. Floodwaters surging through middle east of Tennessee. This weekend, the flooding in rural areas took out roads, cell phone towers, telephone lines, leaving families uncertain about whether their loved ones survived the unprecedented deluge. Emergency workers were searching door to door. Say a prayer for those people. Food and Drug Administration has granted full approval to Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for individuals 16 years and older. Meanwhile, the FDA has reiterated a warning against the use of ivermectin as a COVID-19 treatment amid growing reports of individuals taking the drug often used to treat parasitic worms in animals. Mississippi state health officials recently issued an alert prompted by increasing calls of people with potential ivermectin exposure taken to prevent or treat COVID-19 infection. While the drug has FDA approval for certain types of animals and in humans, over 70% of the apparent recent calls involve livestock problems. Interesting. I will say, though, this, that my daughter-in-law's sister came down with COVID. The doctor prescribed ivermectin pills, and it went away within 2 days. Sitting in front of a computer or television all day is not actually the healthiest activity that you could pick. While that may not be a secret, a new study reveals that a lifestyle of sitting on a couch like this makes someone 7 times more likely to suffer a stroke than the most physically active people. Intel has announced that it has been awarded a contract for foundry services through a Department of Defense program intended to support leading-edge semiconductor manufacturing in the U.S. We've got a major, major shortage of semiconductors and chips. Lauren Weinstein, our expert on such matters. Well, is that going to help at all, Lauren?
Yeah, it will, but let's back up for a second and remind ourselves how we ended up in this situation. Over the years, U.S. designers and manufacturers of chips voluntarily offshored chip manufacturing until there was essentially no advanced chip production fabs left here in the U.S. Most of the advanced chips have been coming from one firm in Taiwan and from Samsung in South Korea, who's another chip manufacturing giant. And this is largely because U.S. firms just didn't want to do the manufacturing anymore. The foreign firms did, and importantly, governments in those countries have helped financially with those firms because chip fabs are enormously expensive, and government here in the U.S. didn't want to give similar help to U.S. firms. So the continuing chip shortage has affected virtually every industry, from consumer electronics of all sorts to electric cars, and now we see it has national security implications as well, because there are no onshore sources for the chips the Pentagon needs, and that's a big security risk, an operational risk, you name it. So now the Pentagon is starting to put some real money into this, with an initial $100 million award split between Intel's new chip fab operation and with some other firms on a program called RAMP-C, which is Rapid Assured Microelectronics Prototypes Commercial. And the idea is to have a reliable and trusted source for these kinds of chips that the military needs. And what can I say other than it's about time? Like I said, other governments have financially supported their country's chip fab operations, and we should have been doing the same thing starting years ago and onward. But especially given the chip shortages, this new program is definitely better late than never. But we should keep in mind that the firm I mentioned in Taiwan says they'll be spending $100 billion over the next 3 years to add chip capacity. So obviously we still have a long, long way to go.
Absolutely, but it is some good news, and it's about time, as you said, Lauren. Thank you so much. The euphoria in the U.S. housing market may be flashing a danger signal. A lofty home series of values could be at risk of a sharp drop. Record low interest rates, historically tight inventories, and the COVID-19 pandemic pulling forward the flight from city centers to the suburbs have sparked an unprecedented rise in U.S. home prices. But as they say, the higher you get, the bigger you fall. Bitcoin has topped $50,000 for the first time since May as crypto prices continued an ongoing recovery from a disorderly rout just 3 months ago. That's pretty strong. What's going on in the skies these days? Let's check in with Dr. Sky, Stephen Cates. Hey, Stephen, what do you got for us?
Hi there, George. We begin with space, and we talk about the Dragonfly space mission to Saturn, you know, the current Mars Perseverance rover and its amazing technology demonstrator, Ingenuity. We, of course, know we've been making history and news with its ability to fly on Mars. But as great as this is, George, get set for the Dragonfly mission to Saturn's moon Titan, a new and exciting mission set to launch to Saturn in 2027. This will employ a new type of drone known as Dragonfly, whose purpose is to search for microbial life in the atmosphere of Titan and study the vast lakes on Titan, which are rich in liquid hydrocarbons. And if all goes as planned, Dragonfly will reach Saturn and Titan in the year 2034. Dragonfly will be a larger type craft, capable of flying upwards of 13,000 feet above Titan and powered by a radioisotope thermoelectric generator. And the atmosphere of Titan is perfect for flying, as it's thicker than that of Mars. So we have some amazing science, George, to come from this super platform of the future. In astronomy, we'll talk about this mysterious object in the Milky Way that may be an arm of our galaxy. Ooh. Radio telescope observations tell us that there may be a new, as of now unknown, arm of our Milky Way galaxy. They call it Cattail, a huge filament of gas and stars and dust located at the outer edge of the galaxy, maybe some 16,000 light years long. Our Milky Way has four major spiral arms, that is, the Scutum Centaurus arm, then the two arms we call in between, known as the Norma and Sagittarius arms. But, George, our sun is part of the Sagittarius arm, and looking further, we're also part of the Orion Spur. And the arm would be the most distant yet known at some 68,000 light years from Earth. We wrap it up with the live sky, what people out there can actually see. And that full Sturgeon moon, how beautiful was that, George? It's also called a blue moon. It fades to gibbous, and it fades in the evening and morning sky, moving to last quarter phase on the 30th. Get set for Venus as it gets brighter in the northwestern sky at sunset. Now moving into the constellation of Virgo, the maiden, now very bright. 108 million miles away from us. If you took a light beam, it would take 9 minutes and 43 seconds to get there. But get a load of this. Venus will be closest to the Earth this century on December the 20th of 2085, at the amazing close distance of some 24,500,000 miles. It's the closest planet that actually gets to us. Finally, Jupiter and Saturn adorn the late summer skies in the southeast at 8 p.m., and they offer great views in small to medium telescopes. Don't miss it. More information, as always, at theskylive.com. Emails, we love them, drskyshow@gmail.com. Obviously, always remember to keep your eyes to the skies, as I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens. And, George, we say hello to listener Sharon, Rock Springs Cafe here in Arizona. She just loves Coast and what you do on the air, and she says she never misses a show. Thank you.
Hello there, Linda. Thank you, Dr. Sky. We'll talk to you next Monday. Well, when we all pass on, do we all reincarnate? In a moment, Linda Backman back with us as we talk about souls on Earth on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George and Ori with you. Dr. Linda Backman is a licensed psychologist with more than 40 years of experience in private practice. Dr. Backman studied, co-taught, and co-established the Society for Spiritual Regression, which is now called the Newton Institute, with pioneering therapist Dr. Michael Newton. She has conducted thousands of past lives and between lives hypnotherapy regression sessions. Back in 1997, Dr. Backman and her husband, Dr. Earl Backman, established the Raven Heart Center in Boulder, Colorado, dedicated to guiding individuals to discover their soul path. She's also an author, Bringing Your Soul to Light, The Evolving Soul, Souls on Earth. Linda, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, George. It's good to be back.
And how are you? And everything fine for you and your husband?
Thank you for asking. We are doing just fine. Yeah.
Great. I know with COVID all over the place, I have to ask that every once in a while.
Yes, exactly.
How did you get involved in past lives?
Well, That's so funny. I thought, okay, well, George is probably going to ask me this story that seems like it's getting older and older, which is fine because it really kind of normalizes this. So to make a long story short, George, in 1993, I was a psychologist in private practice, not into this work, not knowing if I believed in reincarnation at all. My original psychologist colleague at the age of 32 died in 93 from a type of lung cancer.
Oh,
and lo and behold, I mean, obviously very sad and difficult experience, of course, for his family and friends. But when he crossed over, I began to, you know, truly believe that he was talking to me from the other side, which at that point in time I thought was weird, but I knew it felt right. I also began believing that he was showing me scenes of past lives that he had shared with me. And so probably even another solid piece that surprised me was then I said to my husband, who at that point we'd been married 20 or 25 years, I said to my husband, you know, here's what's going on for me. And he said, okay. And I said, okay, you know, don't you think this is strange? And he said, no. He said, I guess I repress what happened to me as a child when I was about 10. And I said, what are you talking about? And he said, well, only now do I remember, you know, some 30 some odd years later. He said, I began to remember my past lives spontaneously in detail when I was 10. I knew I was a man. I lived in India. And my husband, whose first name is Earl, Earl said, I didn't tell anybody because I thought they'd think I was a crazy kid. And he just blocked that out. So that was permission for me, George, to, you know, follow something that felt strange for a psychologist in the beginning mm-hmm. and yet totally fascinated me.
And Linda, before the episode, were you a believer in life after death? Were you a believer that when we die, we did go to some other plane of existence?
Not really. I mean, I was raised in a pretty strongly Jewish family, but I was raised with just some, you know, simple basic belief that, you know, something comes after, but there was no definition. I didn't understand the teachings of Kabbalah, which today I do in a fair amount of depth, but I didn't know that even Judaism, much less other belief structures, you know, even talked about the afterlife.
It is fascinating, though. It really is. And as we all get a little older, we begin to think about the possibilities of what's it like and what it can be. And I think a lot, too, Linda, of people that I've known over the years that have passed on. I've always questioned, you know, like my father, my sister, where are they? What has happened to them? Where have they gone? And I've become a staunch believer now because of things like that.
Great.
Now,
I can tell you, I know where they've gone because I've been doing regression for so many years.
Tell me.
Well, I mean, I have absolutely no doubt, having guided, you know, more people than I could possibly count. And I think what's important for people who don't understand what I call soul regression is that I don't give the information to the client. They give the information to me. I just support them to relax and, you know, begin to guide them to discover past lives and their soul level. But bottom line is that when we die, and this has been described to me time and time again as I guide past life regression, but as the client reaches that stage in the past life where, you know, where death occurs or where physical death occurs, which I call passing or transition at this point. But bottom line is that we bring a holographic portion of our soul energy into our body when we're born and we're viable outside of the womb. And that holographic, that same aspect, if you will, of our soul energy leaves our body when our cardiopulmonary functions cease and returns back, increases its frequency, returns back to the higher realm, the spiritual realm, heaven, if people want to call it that, and steps back in, sort of reconstitutes itself back into the higher self.
You talk about reincarnation relating to the evolution of humanity. Tell me about that.
Well, the bottom line, sort of contrary to some belief structures, is that the soul is not perfect. Our soul is created, and then essentially the laws of the universe are that our soul must evolve. It's sort of like, you know, a child at 5 or 6 must go to school in one way or another and be educated. So we're educated in the body. We learn by, you know, you might say tripping and falling when we come into body. And as we evolve as a soul, and as our soul gains a higher level, you might say, of wisdom, our role when we come into body, among other things, but a portion of our role is to aid the evolution of humanity. And that's a tough job, especially in the times we're living in now.
Oh, absolutely. It really is. But you have no doubts anymore about the existence of reincarnation, do you?
No, I have no doubts, George, because I guide clients pretty much week in and week out. And I mean, a little bit like for anybody who's read the books of Dr. Michael Newton, who was once my mentor, I have no doubt, because it's almost like a case study approach to empirical research, is that I hear repetitive and related stories and symptoms and signs as the client is leaving the body at the end of the past life and beginning to reconnect with their higher self.
We're going to talk more about this after the break, Linda, but you have talked about soul regression, and there's 3 types of souls that incarnate on planet Earth. I'll buzz through them real quickly, and then you can start describing what they are. Earth-based, interplanetary-based, and angelic realm. Let's talk about the Earth-based for a moment.
Well, Earth-based souls essentially are souls that are created to primarily incarnate on Earth. I mean, it's just that simple, that they are souls. I personally happen to be an Earth-based soul, so, you know, I probably could, you know, give a lot more detail to being an Earth-based soul, just because that's me and who I am. But essentially, they're souls that are designed to incarnate in the human body on Earth.
Does that happen with the majority of past lives, that they're Earth-based?
Yes. If you're an Earth-based soul, or what I call an EB, then the bulk of your lives are on Earth. That's not to say you might not have a few lives that are elsewhere. You know, I call it interplanetary. Mm-hmm. That's just a word for somewhere in the spiritual realm.
What determines, Linda, whether you're Earth-based or not?
It's determined, George, by when your soul is created. In other words, I don't, you know, as an Earth-based soul, I didn't choose to be Earth-based. That's just essentially the soul. It's almost like, well, you know, okay, so I was born, you know, with, actually, that's not a good example, because we do choose our skin color. But yeah, so no, I didn't say to some higher being, please create me as an Earth-based soul. I was simply designed as an Earth-based soul.
Interesting take on that. And by doing so, you have free choice, I guess, right?
When we come into body on the Earth, we have free will. In other words, we can go against the plan that we put in motion or intended to have happen, those soul intentions, we can go against them. Of course, that's what generates karma.
And the soul, there's only one soul to an individual, I would assume, right? And that, if you incarnate 15 times, it's the same soul, right?
Okay, all these topics get broader and broader, as you well know. So,
sure.
Yes, you come into body with a soul. And it's my understanding from almost 28 years of regression, we don't ever have 2 souls inhabiting our body, but we can have what we might in a crazy way call a soul switch, which most people call a walk-in.
Interesting. All right. The next one type of soul is called interplanetary. That probably means other planets.
Yeah, that means, you know, what people know that your program is often about. Yes, absolutely. That means that's a soul that was designed to primarily incarnate somewhere other than on Earth. And the simple explanation to why do I learn so much about interplanetary or IP souls is because I've had so many clients who've come for regression. Some have a hunch they're interplanetary. Some have no clue before they come for the regression. We discover they're interplanetary through the process and the content of the regression.
Assuming, Linda, that there are a zillion inhabited planets out there, do people generally stay on their planet in their, when they incarnate? Let's talk about that when we come back. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, Linda Backman with us, of course, Dr. Linda Backman, as we are talking about reincarnation. Linda, your books are still available, are they not?
They are, yes, absolutely.
Amazon and who knows where, right?
Amazon, easiest place, or usually through us, through our website, if you're looking for, you know, a hard copy of all three books.
Super. Okay, and we've got your website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. So we're talking about the three types of souls, Earth-based, interplanetary-based, angelic realm. Let's get back to the interplanetary. If there are a zillion planets out there, are they? Do you think the souls from that particular planet, wherever it may be, are relegated to that planet like the earthbound ones are?
Yes. I mean, the bottom line, George, is that an interplanetary soul has a home base, what I like to call a home base. And so they come from somewhere in the celestial realm, could be a planet, could be a star system, could be a non-dense location that we would call interdimensional space. But they come from a home location, you know, like you say, of which they're innumerable.
That's amazing. Okay, and the third area is angelic realm. That's self-explanatory, but you tell us about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of self-explanatory. And you know, I'll keep saying that all this information keeps coming forward as I work with people. And you know, I feel like I end up working with the people I'm meant to work with so that we're learning more. And obviously, it's a therapeutic process. But angelic realm souls are souls that are not Earth-based souls. They're not interplanetary souls. They are souls that belong to what we call the angelic realm, which essentially is the energetic group of souls that serve the divine. People can use whatever word they want, you know, God, Great Spirit, the Source. One of the terms that I come across a lot is called the Manu. It's an Eastern term, M-A-N-U, meaning that coordinating force. And so the angelic realm souls serve the divine. They have a characteristic nature, and which they bring to Earth when they come into body as well. Their characteristic nature is essentially, these words almost don't do it justice, but pure love and compassion, pure caring. Yeah.
Can you tell with the personality of a human being if they might have come from the angelic realm?
Sometimes, yes. I thought so. At times I meet someone, I often can sort of, if I meet someone even before I guide a regression and they're interplanetary, that is usually more obvious than any of the other two. But yes, at times I can tell.
Now, when a human being dies, take us through the dying process for a moment, Linda, based on what you know, and how quickly, Earth time, would they reincarnate?
Ooh, good question. You know, George, it varies a lot, but I would say bottom line is that the more evolved the soul of any of the three types, the more evolved the soul, the more quickly they incarnate. Simply because, especially, and you know, we're talking about, of course, incarnation on Earth. Because, and I'm sure we'll get into this, but because there are so many complicated issues and problems going on the Earth, that souls at times are going to come back quickly, so that they can continue aiding the evolution of humanity.
Some mediums contact the dead. Now, if someone has reincarnated, that soul has reincarnated, can you still contact the deceased, or are they basically gone?
Oh, easy answer, because we always have a higher self, meaning you, George, me, you know, Tom, anybody who's alive, we have a higher self at all times because we don't ever bring 100% of our soul energy into our bodies. It would blow the electrical circuitry of our human bodies. So if your loved one has crossed over, but they've reincarnated and a medium or a channel, or even you, the loved one, trying to connect with the one on the other side, you're connecting with their higher self.
Then what is a split incarnation?
Okay. You know, these are current things that I think are so important for people to understand. So a soul can be incarnate in more than one body simultaneously. And so that just simply means that, I'll just use myself as an example just to explain it. It means that an aspect of my soul, of course, causes me, Linda, to be alive. But another aspect of my soul can concurrently or simultaneously be alive and be in body at the same time that I'm alive.
Elaborate a little bit more on that, Linda.
Well, you know, I'll give an example. I was thinking about this a lot, George, before we started with the program. So we have souls. So now I'm going to just broaden this. We have some souls that continue to reincarnate from thousands of years ago. And so one soul that I've tracked and I've learned more and more about split incarnations, and you know, now I'm broadening this to a very advanced soul that continues to incarnate. So and as I explain this, and I'm going to talk about the Moses soul, I want people to know I'm not, you know, necessarily moving this conversation into something religious, but the soul of the one that we once knew as Moses, that of course is written about in the Old Testament, is a soul that is, because the intention doesn't change, is a, you might call them a change maker, and so, or, you know, a catalyst. So the Moses soul continues to incarnate even in current times. I've come across both split incarnations, but obviously reincarnation, so both fit what I'm talking about, of that highly advanced soul that continues to work to try to move humanity forward.
We used to have a dear friend who's passed on. He's probably reincarnated himself, Dr. Morgus, and he was a weathercaster in his early days in New Orleans and Detroit, and a zany scientist type. And he was a friend of ours. And but he always used to talk about the higher order, the higher order. He was always talking about that. And I noticed that you've talked about the higher council. Tell me about that, because we may be talking about the same thing.
Okay. So and all this, I'm going to focus all this on Earth. And I say that because if I'm working with clients, which is what I do and where I gain information, we're focusing on the needs of Earth. That's not to say there isn't life that's interplanetary, and, you know, that's not to say there isn't life that's angelic. So focusing in on Earth, and starting specifically with Earth and Earth-based souls, there is a, call it a council, call it a congress, call it a kind of an organizational model of like a parliament. The higher selves of advanced souls, I'm going to say, sit on a council in the spiritual realm, and two things happen. One, they serve as spiritual guides, so they're doing what they can to influence Earth through their process of guiding. But they also... it's a complicated topic. They also make decisions about, well, okay, humans are struggling with COVID, and now they're struggling with the Delta variant. So what can we do to try to, you know, to move this issue forward with humanity? The Higher Council of Earth is a group of the higher soul of experienced souls that serve as a congress of sorts.
Interesting take on that. It's fascinating. The more you get into it, the more it's got order and structure to it and everything else. There's got to be a divine creator somewhere, Linda, don't you think?
I have no doubt there is a divine force at a higher level.
Yes, exactly. Who that has so meticulously thought this all through. I mean, it's like a puzzle. When you look at a puzzle and all the pieces are scattered all over the table, and as you put it together, they all seem to fit in their proper order. That's what's happening in this universe, isn't it?
I so agree. And there's the intention to fit it into a proper order. In the case of Earth, there's the intention for us as humans to operate, you know, in a compassionate but following science and, you know, operating in a healthy, you know, mind, body, spirit, healthy way as possible.
We talk a lot about spirit guides. We've done that for quite a while. Exactly what are the spirit guides? Who are the spirit guides?
So for each of us as a soul, we have at least a guide, and a spiritual guide is the soul energy. Even if the guide is incarnating, some guides still incarnate, some guides don't incarnate. But each of us has at least a guide, if not a team of guides. They are souls that are somewhat more evolved than we are, or have a, you might say, you know, I keep using that word evolved. They have greater wisdom. They, you know, they have this, you might say, higher perspective. They serve as our support buddy and our, you know, our mentor. But the bottom line is we don't always choose to listen. That's the hard part.
Are they like guardian angels?
Yeah, I think that's for me, that's a synonymous term. I think that fits perfectly.
Exactly. And who assigns them to us, or do we somehow grab onto them?
Well, because there are levels of wisdom or evolution, they're assigned to us from a level or a soul that is somewhat more evolved than they are, and somewhat more evolved than we are. I mean, it's as you've already said, when you're talking about the puzzle pieces and you're working on this great big jigsaw puzzle that looks like nothing in the beginning, it all fits together.
It does. It's truly remarkable. What other cultures really understand and believe in reincarnation? All of them?
Well, no, I mean, I think probably most people know that I would say every Eastern belief structure has taught reincarnation and believed in reincarnation from the get-go. In the Western world, where we have the three religions based on Abraham, only the mystical portions of those religions, so the Sufis of the Muslim religion, the Kabbalists, the Kabbalah or Kabbalah, people say it, depends on where you are in the world, how you pronounce it. The Kabbalistic teachings of Judaism teach this. And then there are more ancient teachings of Christianity. The Essenes taught this in the times of Jesus.
I learned of reincarnation when I was a youngster. I must have been about 10 years old. And people would talk to me about India and how they believed in reincarnation and that they didn't eat meat or cows because they felt that, you know, their loved one reincarnated as a cow, so they didn't eat them. And that's what I thought for years reincarnation was all about, Linda.
Yeah, I mean, people ask me that very question, you know, do human souls evolve to animal souls? My understanding from as many years as I've been guiding regression is primarily no, that animal souls are animal souls, human souls are human souls. Where it becomes a little bit confusing, or you might even say conflated, is I think there are some water-based mammals, the cetaceans, the whales, the dolphins, the porpoises. There may be an overlap there. I also know that interplanetary souls, when they have physical structure at their home location, they may appear animal-like. So there we get confused because their container, you might say, can look like an animal.
At what point does the individual stop reincarnating? What causes that to stop, if it does stop?
for the most part, a level of evolution. So the higher, the greater the wisdom, ultimately, and to some degree, it's my understanding, it's a choice.
Would you say it's reaching the heavenly state? Once you hit that perfection, you don't come back anymore?
Well, I think what so many people may not understand is that our soul, our higher self, as we gain greater wisdom, our soul has roles and responsibilities in the higher realm. So I always say, you know, we don't sit around and, you know, eat pizza and drink beer in the higher realm. We have coordinating jobs in the spiritual realm.
Fascinating. Linda Backman with us. Her websites are linked up at coasttocoastam.com, and her books are available, Souls on Earth, The Evolving Soul, Bringing Your Soul to Light. Any more books coming out, Linda?
Well, people keep pushing me, George, to write one about angelic realm souls because I keep having more and more clients flow into my practice, which I'm sure is guided at a higher level. That's how I'm learning about what I call AR souls. So that's a possibility. But, you know, I teach virtual courses and all that sort of thing about this kind of content.
All right. We're going to come back and take phone calls with Linda next hour. So get ready to let your fingers do the walking right to your phone and dial her up. And let's talk about reincarnation. All that and much more just ahead on Coast to Coast AM. Linda Backman, our special guest. We will be back.